Hey, what's going on, everybody? Today, the pleasure to chat with American country singer-songwriter Chase Mitchell. In this newest episode, Chase joined me to talk about his newest singles, Firefly, Strawberry Daiquiris, Back Road, getting a record deal at age 9, experience working with Radio Disney, performing with boy band Lucky, opening for Taylor Swift, and more. Now, with that being said, hope you enjoy my conversation with Chase.
Hello, Chase.
What's going on, dude? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I mean, 4th of July is upon us now, and I guess that means there's going to be a lot of celebrations going on. There's going to be a lot of fireworks happening on in throughout the night. Talk to us about what does 4th of July mean to you?
Oh man, 4th of July means a few things. Obviously, hanging out with your family and just being grateful to have all this freedom that we get to exercise here in America on a day-to-day basis that someone else obviously paid the ultimate price for. But it also means having some hot dogs and having some grilling out, having some cold beer, and watching the kids run around and play, and obviously fireworks, all of that.
Absolutely. I mean, if there was one question I could ask you is, I guess, what is one thing that keeps you going, aside from the music and everything going on?
I mean, honestly, the thing that keeps me going the most these days is my family, the utter support they've had for these last several years. When it gets tough, it's just a lot easier to kind of pull on the fact that there's people that you care about that are rooting for you. I know there's a lot of artists out there, man, that some of their family members or friends kind of maybe look at it like it's a silly career path, or how in the world could you ever make a living doing music? But that's something I'm fortunate to say. I got a lot of support from my friends and family, so I normally lean on that.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I guess like there's so much things going on with 4th of July events, and I know that we are coming you're coming from live from the car, and we are dropping for a car cast here. I guess he's headed to Pensacola Beach, which is obviously one of the festivities going on right now with 4th of July. I mean, if there's one thing that you're looking forward to doing, aside from the beach and everything with 4th of July, what is something that excites you for today?
Well, so the next couple of days will be so Blue Angels. You familiar with the Blue Angels? They're like the jets, the military fighter jets.
I have no clue
No,
about that.
they're basically what the movie Top Gun.
Oh yes, I know Top Gun. Yeah.
Yeah, they're kind of what they based that those movies from the 80s and now with Tom Cruise was basically the Blue Angels. They're super talented military fighter pilots that go on to do like amazing air shows and tricks and stuff, and they've been doing it for decades now. And they have a big air show every week, the week that follows 4th of July down here in Pensacola. And they've been really kind to have me play as the live music part of the festival for the week. For this is my 3rd year in a row doing it, so it's a huge honor. And yeah, I'm super excited for that. We've got shows 6th, 7th, and 8th down here at Pensacola Beach.
Absolutely. Well, you are from Charleston, West Virginia. Tell us about life growing up and how sort of you sort of came to the love of music in the first place and how you sort of now carry that on throughout your career.
So I was born in Charleston, West Virginia. I've got a lot of family from West Virginia. I actually grew up, we moved when I was young. I grew up in Atlanta, but as fate would have it, I would end up meeting my wife, who is right here driving, you'd say. She's actually from West Virginia, and all of her family, we were literally born in the same hospital and grew up our whole lives, not really knowing each other, but as fate would have it, we would definitely kind of bring it full circle. My dad actually was not born in Charleston, West Virginia, but also met my mom in Charleston and got married. So it's kind of cool. But yeah, I grew up in Atlanta, and I was really young when we moved. I was probably like 2 or 3 years old, and that's pretty much where I would spend the majority of my life growing up. And that's what got me into music. When I was really young, I got cast to be a part of a boy band back in the early 2000s, like literally like 2000 or 2001. And yeah, we got to do some cool stuff with like Radio Disney, and I got to travel all around the country performing for Radio Disney's little concert series that they did called Peanut Butter and Jams. So it was very cliche, But it was really, really cool because it got my feet wet in the music world. And I knew early on that's what I wanted to do with the rest of my life.
Would you say that you're grateful for those experiences with, I guess, specifically when you first got your record deal at age 9, which is very rare for other artists to get such a record deal like that at a very, very young age. Tell us, what that meant to you. I guess being young, you still don't know what you're doing, but you still have that awareness. But what did it mean to you to get that record deal so young?
It kind of I realized then at a really young age that because I didn't know what that really meant. You know, at 19 years old, you don't really know what signing a recording contract or a management contract really entails. You're just a kid. You're just happy to be there and just doing what you love to do. But I did notice around then it became a lot more serious with like my parents and the other adults that were, you know, in the picture. As far as like you know, on the business side of stuff, everything became a lot more serious. It wasn't like all fun and games and cute anymore. It was like, okay, there's attorneys in the room now, and there's these people in suits, and you know, it's like as a kid, you're kind of picking up on all that. So at that age, I realized that it really was a serious thing and a blessing, you know, to be able to and trying to help you with your dream. So it also felt like a lot of pressure too, at such a young age.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I do want to talk about as well with, I guess you just touched on about Radio Disney and those experiences. But also, being a part of a boy band, what was that like for you, growing up? And I guess now looking back on it, what sticks out the most?
So I basically looked at the boy band thing as, you know, they basically were like my older brothers, Justin and Tim. You know, I was 9, 10 years old when we first got kind of real serious and started signing all these contracts and stuff. And they were 19 and 21. So there was a huge age gap. They just always were like big brothers to me. So it never really felt like there was like a competition or any kind of that you might hear about when, you know, these boy bands kind of make these documentaries years later. We were all just best friends and brothers, really. And I'm super, super grateful because I learned really how to be a performer when I was in that, you know, amongst those dudes, and I learned how, you know, songs were made and how it worked in the recording studio. And instead of it being someone I didn't really know trying to coach me or teach me, it was basically just like my big brothers that were, you know, taking care of me, showing me the ropes.
Absolutely. And I guess there's also a lot of experiences you've had along the way, and a part of, I guess, your career, you happen to be opening for Taylor Swift, which is crazy to think about. What was that like to be able to share that experience, I guess, now in your career, and looking back, what sort of sticks out?
So that was like a really crazy experience. And actually, it made me like really, really determined and like hopeful and like optimistic because I was basically doing stuff in Nashville in and around when she was still very much trying to like make it. She had just gotten her record deal over at Big Machine, which back then it was called Show Dog Records and Big Machine Records. It was like two record labels into one. Toby Keith actually was a part of her early on record company that she was with. I don't think a lot of people know that Scott Burchett and Toby Keith actually and Taylor Swift's dad were who had started that company. But long story short, you know, Nashville's a small town, so our paths kind of crossed a few times, and we were both out there hustling it, trying to just make it, doing showcase after showcase. And then it seemed like in a blink of an eye, someone just like snapped their finger. And Taylor Swift had her first single out, Tim McGraw, and it was blowing up, you know, at radio. And then I think by the time she had her second or third single out, was when we got the chance to go and play a festival with her called Country Concert in the Hills. And it was in Fort Laramie, Ohio. And the amount of people that showed up, like, just blew my mind because all I was thinking about is, man, it wasn't just a year or two ago. And you were still out here hustling it up and down Music Row like I was. So it made me really hopeful. You know, it really was like encouraging, honestly. to see that and to see how far she stayed with it and taking it. You know, I always was blending pop and R&B with country way back in the day before anyone was doing it. And to see her be able to do what she's done in her unique way, again, I think that just gives me even more motivation to kind of just keep going.
Of course. And obviously with those experiences comes with inspirations that you've had along the way and different artists that you've picked up in terms of inspirations and influences. And something that stuck out to me was you sort of love to be inspired by international artists, which is really cool to see. I mean,
yes.
Talk to me about sort of where that first started and does that still occur now?
Absolutely. I was told early on by a couple different kind of like mentors of mine, never chase what's on the radio, because if you do, you're going to sound like, yes, by the time you get around to recording or put something out, it's going to sound like yesterday's, you know, stuff. So that's why it's really important to just always be as unique as possible and as honest as possible and not try to, you know, I feel like these days everyone's trying to, especially there in Nashville, trying to write the next big Morgan Wallen song or the next big Bailey Zimmerman song. And it's like, that's already been done, you know, and they're doing it. So I feel like the only thing I can do to keep my mind open is to listen to artists from all over the world, and not just what's popular right now here in America, because you might discover something that you like, something that you want to incorporate into one of your own songs. And that's part of, you know, the biggest thing about being a creative for me is just being a sponge, you know, soaking up good music's good music, whether it's somewhere you've been before or somewhere of good music, music is a feeling. I feel like if you can draw on that, you're going to come across something that's just more unique. And it makes me worry less. Like if I'm definitely a sponge in that sense. And I reiterate what's being done. So I have to be careful to make sure I'm putting in something different, you know, in my ears.
Absolutely. Well, I want to talk about your singles that you've had out. You've had a lot of them, but I want to talk about two particular ones, Back Road as well. And you had two other songs that you recently released, which are Strawberry Daiquiris and Fireflies. But the two of them that stuck out the most are Back Road, Strawberry Daiquiris. Talk to us about Back Road first, and then we'll get into Strawberry Daiquiris afterwards.
So Back Road is a song that I wrote with a good friend of mine, Danny Rader. And that was my first real single after all these years of doing music. We've never taken a song to radio. So that was kind of like something way different and super exciting. And yeah, it was, we released it back in October. And these last 6 months, it, you know, has been up and down on the charts. And that's just been a wild ride. I've never had anything like that happen. California. When I heard it for the first time on the radio, and that was wild. I'm literally sitting halfway across the country. We were doing some shows out in Napa and at the end of October, and we're just sitting there, and all of a sudden, boom, it came on. I was like, "That, oh man, it was insane."
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about Strawberry Daiquiris. Where did this song come from, and tell us about the creation behind it.
I don't know if you can see it or not. So Strawberry Daiquiris, I'm a beach dude at heart. I know some people like being, you know, in the mountains or being on a farm. I'm a beach dude at heart. And my also Danny Rader, my producer, who I wrote it with, he was born and raised in Panama City Beach. And so we just kind of both wanted to write something that was just a feel good, you know, just relaxing kind of summer vibe, something that almost not quite reggae, but something that you could imagine yourself being on the beach, just relaxing to. And so we kind of went down the path of what experiences I have, he has, and we're both lucky to marry our childhood sweethearts that we went to high school with. Now he actually went to Panama City Beach High School. And so if you listen to the song, there's some, you know, PCB references and just basically that nostalgic love, like going back to that summertime feeling. You know, imagine a couple who's maybe been married for 20 years and life's just busy and kids are growing up, and all you want to do is just for one weekend slow it down and go back to that spot where you fell in love on the beach. And so that was our goal with Strawberry Daiquiris. And
absolutely.
I think we got close.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, there's also another single that you've recently released, which is Fireflies. Now, I want to ask you, is that correlating with Owl City's song Fireflies, or what's going on there?
Well, so I actually wrote and recorded that song. I just released it a few days ago on a whim. It wasn't planned at all. I recorded that song back in 2005. I was like 16 years old when I wrote and recorded that song with a good buddy of mine, Nick Culbertson. And it sat on a hard drive now for over a decade or more, decade and a half. And the other night we were out catching fireflies with my daughters, and my wife had gotten this amazing picture. That's my daughter in the album art. And I was just like, man, like, why have I not released Fireflies? I have a song about this, you know? And so she was like, just do it then. Let's just do it. You know, like, who's telling you you can't? So that was kind of why we got around to releasing that song. If you can tell and you listen, you can probably hear I sound so much younger in it. I was 16 when I recorded it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, obviously, you're just talking about Danny Rader, who's Academy of Country Music Musician of the Year winner. Now he's taking you under his wing and mentoring you as not only a songwriter, but also a recording artist. What does his help have meant to you over your career so far?
So Danny has basically been helping me more than I can honestly, than anyone could imagine. You know, a lot of the times producers and artists get put together by the label, or, you know, maybe it's just, if they're lucky, someone that they, you know, have heard of or worked with before. But the relationship with Danny and I, it's more little brother, big brother. I actually met Danny when I was about 16, 17 years old, when he was touring with Jason Aldean. And then fast forward like 12, 13 years later or so, we would meet again. And we just kind of, after reconnecting, decided, you know what, dude, let's write a bunch of music and let's just see where this goes. And so he's kind of been showing me the ropes on how Nashville, you know, publishing works, songwriting, how it works to go in and actually develop a song from scratch. So, and then more than that, also just, he's an amazing father, an amazing husband, and he's been so successful in his career in music that there's a lot of takeaways and a lot of lessons that he's able to teach me. So it's just kind of worked out to be this just beautiful thing. And I'm so, so grateful for it.
Of course. And I mean, there's one advice that I remember doing some research about you, and you someone asked you about what was the best advice that you've been given. And you said that there is a reason why racehorses wear blinders. If you're focused on someone else's race, you'll miss your shot and the magic of the moment. Does that advice still sort of stick with you today more than ever?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's something I have to remind myself week to week, because at the end of the day, it's not, there's only so much space, you know, for artists on radio, and it's like real estate. And sometimes it's really easy to get caught up in it, and you start viewing everyone as your competition or something. And that's never fun. You know, you don't want to be stuck in that mode all the time. And so I kind of have to remind myself, run your race. You know, it's not about what everyone else is doing. You know, God has a plan for you, and that's true. And in his time, everything works out. And so as long as you're just focusing on what you have to handle, then, you know, and control what you can control, that's the most that you can really ask for, you know?
Well, of course. And as we're wrapping up here, I want to ask you about if there was one person that is already in heaven that you would want to play a song with, who would that person be? What song would you play?
That would be my pappy. And I would probably play a melody of Wind Beneath My Wings and Country Roads Take Me Home by John Denver.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, if there was, okay, so if there was the,
like, an artist who passed away?
I mean, it could be both, but ideally it probably would want to be if there was one person that is passed away already that you would want to play a song with, who would that be and what song would you play?
Michael Jackson. For sure. For sure.
Do you know what song you would play?
I would probably, I would want it to be one of his like funky songs, like Dirty Diana, but then I wouldn't be able to just do that. I'd have to then do like Man in the Mirror. I'd have to kind of like blend it, because I'd want to rock out with them, and then I'd want to have like a heartfelt moment.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, in regards to your career, what would you say is like the most powerful, like out of body experience that you've had in your career?
Well, I mean, recently it's been kind of crazy with some of these shows that we had on this cheer tour, because I'm real with myself. I know that getting a chance to play in these huge arenas for thousands and thousands of girls is like, or cheerleaders in general, that are screaming their hearts out. It's a rare opportunity, and it feels really good as an artist. And I hope that I'm able to sell some more records and get some more streams up and be able to redo all of that all over again. But it was pretty crazy to see so many people just so excited in one place to be jamming out and singing along.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, with that being said, thank you so much for chatting with me. I had such a great time being able to explore all this music with you. I mean, I really hope you have a great 4th of July, and I hope you do take care of yourself and stay safe out there.
You too, brother. I hope we can do this again sometime soon, man, once we release some more music.
Absolutely. Well, to the listeners who made it this far into the episode, thanks so much for sticking around. I hope you enjoy my conversation with American country singer-songwriter Chase Mitchell. You can find him on social media as well, and I'll tag all of his socials in the description below, and check out his music on all music streaming platforms as well. I've been your host, Shig Mikhail Tseng. Thanks for tuning into the show.